I started drinking at the age of 11. And it was okay in my family, you know. My dad is a real hardcore cowboy Mexican macho, you know, and I love him. You know, that's the image that I got. But then, you know, you start smoking marijuana at the age of 13, you know, with your friends in school, and you don't think it's a big deal. You know, you just don't, you know, you don't realize what you're getting yourself into. 14, I started smoking crack. And also throughout all this, I was always selling marijuana and selling drugs, because if you have an addiction, you want to maintain that addiction, and one of the best ways is to always be around that drug. And then when I turned 16, I found the drug that pretty much took over everything. That was heroin. It was a way of it escaping. It was a way of not having to deal with my father cheating, with the arguments at home. And I'm getting heavier and heavier into the heroin. I started carrying guns and carrying knives and stealing from people, you know, at gunpoint. My friends overdosing in front of me all the time. And I'm not proud of this, but what I would do is I would go into their pockets and take their money and take their drugs. You know, I would wait for them to pass out so that I could do that. When you don't care, it's a very scary place to be, because anything goes. And you don't care about your life, and you don't care about others' lives, and you just, nothing matters besides that drug. You know, that's the only thing that's controlling you, you know? When I finally told my mother that I was using, because she was in denial for a long time. She knew something was wrong. She took me to hospital. She took me to doctors, and oh, you're just depressed. You're just depressed. 5 years into my addiction, I didn't miss a single day. And I told her, I said, Mom, you know, I'm a junkie. I've been using heroin for 5 years every single day. And she says, no, you're not. You're not. That's not, you know, she even told me no, you know. And I said, Ma, this is what's going on. I need you to take me to the emergency room, because I couldn't find drugs. That was the first time in 5 years that I couldn't find this drug. So she took me to the doc, to the emergency room, and they did like a quick 3-4 day detox. And right after the detox, I went right back on the streets and started using again.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Kitty, and today we're going to be talking about psychoactive drugs.
Our guest is Dr. Mickey Ask. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Dr. Ask, what are some of the more common hardcore drugs?
Well, the fact is that the legal drugs cause the most problems. So nicotine kills 430,000 people every year, alcohol 100,000. All of the street drugs combined, less than 25,000 deaths a year. Creates a lot of morbidity and problems. So the next drug that most people experiment with is marijuana. And when people start with those things, it then leads to an association with other substances. So then hardcore, we usually think of cocaine, amphetamines, heroin, and then of course all the psychedelics and hallucinogens, but then also the prescription drugs. So more deaths now from prescription drugs like pain medicines and sleeping pills than heroin and cocaine combined.
Mm-hmm. Are there different routes of administration that make it?
Some people have tried all sorts of ways to get into their body. So eating it, though that takes a while, so you don't get as immediate of an effect, so then you try to snort it or inject it, so it takes 7 seconds to get, actually 21 seconds if you inject it. Smoking it, it's faster, it's about 7 seconds, so that's why nicotine is so addictive, and then of course crack cocaine and smoking cocaine. Now people are smoking heroin, so the kids are smoking heroin. And then unusual ways of rectally or vaginally also.
Wow. What impact is this having on the body if people take these drugs?
Yeah, so depending on the route, if you inject, then you're bypassing the body's normal defense mechanisms and immune system, so you're then at risk for all sorts of infections, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, HIV, infections, so cellulitis, abscesses, pneumonia, etc. If you're snorting it, then that's going to cause perforations in the nose. If you're smoking it, then emphysema, bronchitis, pneumonias. And if you're drinking it, then esophagitis, gastritis, pancreatitis, hepatitis. So the route will influence what sets of complications can occur.
In terms of, if I met somebody on the street, how would I know that they were taking a psychoactive drug? What would I see?
So, you know, there's a normal range of human behavior. I always used to pride myself when I was in the Army that I could act as crazy as somebody who was drinking or using, and I wasn't on anything. So there's a normal range, but it's really the error, the thinking and the errors in judgment. It's really the change in behavior from a person's normal. That's what you're really looking for. Now, of course, normal things, so stress, loss of sleep, feeling overwhelmed, having a fight with somebody that you care about, those can affect you in similar ways. So I always tell the students and residents that this is not an accusation, it's a diagnosis. You need to consider the differential, the different reasons why somebody's behavior can be the way it is, and substances should be part of that. So you're not being judgmental, you're not being accusatory to consider whether substances is really the reason. So you have to think of all of that, all of the above on that.
Sure. What's the long-term impact?
So depending on the substance, then will influence. So alcohol, of course, causes effects in the digestive tract as well as the brain. Cocaine can cause, and speed can cause hallucinations and violent and aggressive behavior. And then depression and suicidality. Actually, all substances increase the risk of suicidality. It's not that they want to do that, but the impulsivity and being in the moment of that use then leads to increased deaths from suicide and depression. So those are a few things that come to mind.
If I was using a substance, how long would it take for it to get out of my body if, you know, I stopped using?
Good question. So there's a couple components of that, water-soluble substances, which most things are, so alcohol, cocaine, amphetamine, heroin, then it's usually a matter of hours to maybe a few days at most if you're a chronic user. Fat-soluble substances like marijuana and PCP then can last, or medications can last days. Marijuana will last in the body for 2 months. I can measure it in the urine for 2 months after the person last used. The half-life is a week for marijuana. So it's months, 3 to 4 months that we can measure brainwave changes on marijuana. So after alcohol, it's the biggest cause of car accidents. And those are the acute effects, but then just like an accident is over with, a car accident's over with in seconds, but the dent can last for a long time. It's the same effect on the body where the drug might be out of your system, but then you still have long-term consequences.
Wow. What are the treatment options for these hardcore drugs?
So the treatment, it's an addiction, so the treatment is really the same. You need help from outside of yourself. Your best judgment created the problem, so you really have to have a humility about your judgment and have other people that you check in with. The degree to which it was out of control influences the degree of structure that a person needs and for how long. So that's why we have halfway houses, recovery houses, inpatient programs, long-term aftercare. Kind of takes 1 to 2 years for the brain to stabilize and for the person to re-socialize. They need support at least for that time, if not longer.
Oh, it sounds like there's really, a long-term process here in terms of treatment as well as having it come out of your system. You hear people all the time saying, oh, I used it, but that was a few days ago, so I'm not an addict. And so it seems very complicated. We're very happy that you're here, and we'll continue our discussion, and Unhooked will be right back.
I joined the military, and I'm clean for about a year off the drugs, but I'm drinking every single day. I start drinking a 30-pack every other day. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And now I'm a full-blown alcoholic. On my lunch break from work, I have to drink 2 or 3 beers because I start to shake. In the military, they have a saying that says it's socially acceptable to drink as long as you don't get caught doing something stupid. I got caught doing something stupid because eventually I went back to the drugs. I failed a drug test in there, and then they kicked me out. On the TV, I saw it was like a Christian channel, but then at the very end, there was a prayer hotline. I remember calling the number for prayer. I said, you know, I just need prayer. And she said, okay, we'll do an unspoken prayer. So this lady, who I don't even know who she is, prayed for me. And the very next day, my mom's on the phone with Mr. and Mrs. Harris's DAP, the Drug Alternative Program. The first thing he said is, I love you, man. You know, I had a mix of emotions. And first I'm thinking, man, you don't even know who I am. How can you love me, you know? I don't love you. I don't know who you are, you know? And it took a long time for me to realize that kind of love that he expressed to me. He said, I love you, and if you want to get clean, I'm giving you 2 days to come over here. So within those 2 days, I got on an airplane. I packed my stuff, and I remember I told Mr. Harris, he asked me, when's the last time you used? I said, well, I'll be honest with you. I used on the airplane coming down here. He says, how'd you do that? And I told him, well, I taped some drugs to my genital area. And while I was on the airplane, I did my last bit. And that's it. So when I came in here, he made me strip right in front of his hairs and everything, got naked right in his house. He said, okay, oh, you taped? Okay, let's make sure you don't have nothing else. It was the best thing that I could have done was to come here. And I fought at first. Within 2 days, I wanted to leave. Actually, he dropped me off. Mr. Harris dropped me off on San Bernardino, some kind of street, I don't even know where, in the middle of the city. And he said, the bus station's that way. You just keep going. You'll hit it. So it took me about an hour and a half walk. I'm calling my mom. Mom, give me some money. I want to come back home. This place isn't for me. This isn't what I want. So it was a struggle for both of her and me, because she had to say no to me. And it's hard for a mom to say no, you know? But I'm so glad that she said no to me, because if I would have went back there, I'd probably be dead or in jail. Because she said, you better call Mr. Harris and beg him to take you back. So I called him after a few hours of fighting and collect calls, and he said, okay, I'll be there. So he came back, maybe around noon, he saw me. He says, yeah, okay, you're still here. I gotta run a couple errands. If you're still here when I come back, then I'll bring you back. So he came and he left. Left me at the bus station. So when I was sitting at the bus station, I had a choice. There was a guy right next to me, a gang member, tattoo, shaved head, tattooed eyebrows, eating a jar of pig's feet. To me, Satan himself, man. Eating a jar of pig's feet, dripping down his chin, all this pig's feet juice, everything, looking right at me, and I'm sitting and I'm looking at him and he's looking at me, and I'm thinking to myself, that's the guy I need to talk to if I want to get drugs. Or if I want to get out of here, or if I want to do anything, that's the guy who knows where to take me. So there's a fight in my head. Either I go with this guy who's going to take me the wrong way, or I sit and I stay right here and I wait for Mr. Harris, you know? So I'm praying, and I prayed right there. I said, God, just what do you want me to do, man? Because I want to go with this guy. So when I prayed, this guy got up and left. He left. I waited a few more hours. Mr. Harris came back, picked me up, brought me back into his program. And that was the best thing that could have happened to me. That was the best thing that could have happened. You don't realize any of that until after.
Welcome back to Unhooked, where we've been talking about psychoactive drugs. Dr. S, sometimes I hear the word tweaking in terms of substance use. What does that mean?
So it usually implies that a person is doing some kind of stimulant, and so they're revved up, they're anxious, they're hyper, they're maybe pressured speech, maybe even hallucinating and zipping around and seeing things, hearing things. So that could all be part of and degrees of that phenomenon.
And that's a part of the course of using a stimulant?
So it depends on the amount that a person is using. The problem with any of these substances, it might start off in a controlled fashion, but then it gets out of control and a person can't self-regulate. That's why we call it addiction.
Mm-hmm. And then they talk about a crash.
So think of stimulants, cocaine and amphetamine and caffeine to a lesser degree, as using up more gas in the tank. So you've stepped on the accelerator, so everything's going faster, so you use it up, the neurotransmitters and the chemicals in our brain, you've used it up, and so you just run out of steam. Actually, a person will go on a run, and they're not getting anything out of it because you've used up all the natural chemicals, and then you have nothing left, and so you come to an abrupt halt, and you crash, you're lethargic, you're tired, you're anhedonic, can't have any good feelings at all, and it takes some days to a few weeks maybe for that to recover.
I would imagine that would make you feel horrible and want to start all over again.
So then you say, oh, I remember how to feel better, so then you start using again. So that's that vicious cycle where that comes in.
Sure. So what would someone do if they know that they have a friend or a family member who's involved in these drugs?
So if somebody was concerned about me and my behavior, I would appreciate somebody coming and talking to me. If it's an addiction concern, we have a saying, though, that if it's just you and an addict in the room, you will always be outnumbered. Okay? So take somebody with you. So the learned skill of an addict is to be very convincing, very manipulative. They know exactly where your buttons are and how to press that and make you feel like you're part of the problem rather than them. So take somebody with you. It helps to go to some self-help groups, Al-Anon, Nar-Anon, so that you get up to speed on what the nature of this problem is, what you can do and what you can't do. So just because you want to help doesn't mean that you can. Even as a doctor, I had to get in touch with this, that there's limitations to what I can do. So getting involved with some, calling a program, talking to them, So not just rushing in and making the problem worse, but getting educated both from 12-step support groups as well as a professional therapist or treatment programs.
Sometimes we talk about hardcore, meaning that, wow, you're really, really addicted, so it's very hard to get off of. Is there hope for somebody who is addicted to psychoactive drugs?
The thing that keeps me going in this field is I see the miracles. Mm-hmm. So that's hits on my personality trait, as I enjoy working on and with people that everybody else has given up on. Mm-hmm. So I see the miracles that keeps me going. There's the tragedies. People do die from this disease. Mm-hmm. So that's the reality. But I've seen much more improvement when I do see it than I ever did with cancer or heart disease or emphysema. So certainly it can improve. So I want to give that message of hope, but it needs to have the right approach. So if somebody's having chest pain, you don't go up and say, I really want to help you. Let's pray. Let's really try harder. No, it's let me help you get to somebody that knows how to deal with it. So we need to pray as though it all depends on God and work as though it all depends on us.
Yeah. What can the faith community do as they, respond to some of these folks who are addicted in this way?
I think it's important that we acknowledge that just because we're in a faith community, we're not immune from it. It's as prevalent in the Adventist church and in churches in general. So we're human. So we don't cluck our tongues when somebody who's devout and faithful gets diabetes. Mm-hmm. Or heart disease, we just realize we're human, these things happen. It's the same thing with addiction. There might have been moral implications. There are certainly moral complications, but that doesn't mean that we should ostracize somebody for that. It still is something that can be treated, can be worked with, and not demeaned.
Mm-hmm. On our personal story, Gerardo was talking in really about the importance of spirituality and God in his recovery and changing an image of God in a way. But he talked about how difficult that was in his recovery. Do you see that in your work as well, that that plays an important role in their recovery?
It always comes down to willingness. I have some of the best and the brightest. I treat physicians, lawyers, nurses, MD, PhDs that are top of the game, heads of sections, heads of departments, and yet their very intellect makes them think they can think their way out of it. And they're the ones that have been some of my sickest patients. I've seen other people that you would never predict that they could improve, and yet if they were willing, had some humility, were able to accept help from outside of themselves, then they were able to improve and lead productive lives.
Is the approach the same with folks that like that? I mean, they're professionals, they know lots of stuff. Do we approach them in the same way that we would anyone else?
Yeah, so it doesn't matter what you do. If you have diabetes, you still need insulin. You still need to work with your diet, still need to exercise. So the principles are the same regardless of the type of person. Now, there are some unique aspects, so of physicians and lawyers and so forth. So we have professional self-help groups and professional treatments, but fundamentally it's the same disease.
Well, in our discussion, it really is impactful how profound and serious it might be to have a psychoactive drug addiction. However, it sounds like there is hope and there's ways
Any kind of addiction.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Ass, for being with us. Stay with us. Unhooked, we'll be right back.
Before, when I was in my drugs, in my addiction, I welcomed Satan. You know, I was hooked with Satan. You're stuck in the rut, you don't want to change because it's all you know, and you don't think you can change, and you don't think you want to go to God because he's not going to accept you because you're a sinner, because you're doing all these negative things. But the thing is, that's exactly when you go to God, when you're doing those things, because that's when he takes you the most, or the strongest. That's when he embraces you even harder, you know? And if you want to be unhooked, you have to stay connected with God. You have to daily talk to God. Oh, life is so much better now. Specifically now, I'm in school. I work at a hospital. I work at Loma Linda University Medical Center. And that is a blessing in itself, just to be able to work in that environment with those people. Because if you ask any of my friends or anybody from Maryland, hey, where's Jerry? Where's he? They'll either say he's dead or he's in jail, because they don't know this Jerry. It just makes me realize that, you know, he's got a plan for all of us. He's got something for all of us. You know, we're not here for nothing. My name is Gerardo, and by the grace of God, I'm unhooked.
Hello, friends. We've learned from Dr. Mickey about psychoactive drugs and the effects that they have on people. Various effects depending upon the type of drug. We've also learned from Gerardo that things like heroin and cocaine can be extremely devastating to a person. One of the things that we learn more than anything else about people is about how false beliefs in addictive families can be destructive. You know, in God's word, we're told that Satan is the father of lies, that he was a liar from the beginning. And he gains victory over us when he convinces us to believe a lie. Wasn't it that way from the very beginning in the Garden of Eden? But many of the lies that addicts believe and children of addicts believe and addict families believe are lies that are related to shame. You're no good. You're never going to amount to anything. We didn't want you to begin with. Basically, we develop a shame core, which is a set of beliefs that say you are of absolutely no value at all. You know, today, God wants you to know how precious and how valuable you are to Him. He wants you to know that those things that are like tapes going around and around in your head don't have to be there anymore. My name is Dr. David. I've worked with many people as a clinical social worker who have been trapped by all of these lies. But I've also found that when we counteract those lies with truth that is found in God's Word, then we have victory in Jesus. One of those wonderful truths is found in Isaiah 43:4. Since you were precious in my sight, and I have loved you, I have given men for you and people for your life. You know, the one man that was given for us is the person of Jesus Christ. He gave his very life for you so that you don't have to believe those lies anymore. You can believe that you are valuable because he loved you enough to die for you. You were created by God because he wanted you. He wanted you, you personally, not just the whole human race, but he brought you into this world because he loves you. Today, no matter what you're struggling with, no matter what addictive practice you are engaged in, that does not mean that you are condemned. There is no condemnation for you because in Jesus you are covered by his righteousness. You're covered by his mantle of love for you personally. If you want that experience today, get more information about it by calling 1-888-446-7388 for prayer or contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. Choose to become unhooked today.